This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to On Target. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and thanks so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure for me to talk to you every week and to introduce you to people here in Western New York who are making a difference in our health and our well-being and our everyday lives and our cultural aspects that we look forward to doing, especially the events during the summer when everything is popping here in Western New York. And not too long ago, I saw a story in the newspaper, actually, about a panel of health-minded leaders, and I thought, well, that's for us. That's for us here in On Target, because we really care about our health and your health, our dear listeners. And it said that a panel of health-minded leaders would give a presentation during something known as Global Wellness Day, which I think there is a Global Wellness Day and Institute and wellness everything, but are we really paying attention to this? Do we really know what wellness is? And how are we doing here in Western New York with wellness? Well, we're going to get an overview of global health care and public health trends from our guest today, who is a very well-known person, and I think he's been on Target before over the years. He is the Western New York Refresh editor, Scott Scanlon, and a lot of the issues about health here in Western New York have been written about in the Refresh, what do you call it, a magazine?
I like it when people call it a magazine.
You like it?
Good
okay,
morning,
I'll
folks.
Do that. It's a magazine. And yeah. I don't know about my listeners, but I religiously look for it every week because there's so many good articles, there's so many good hints about health and well-being and different diseases and different ways that people can prevent getting sick as well as cures for different illnesses. I feel like it's one of the most worthwhile parts of the newspaper. So tell Warren I said that.
Okay,
because I don't think he really cares what I said, but tell him that I think Warren Koval, that it's one of the most, I think, important and informative parts for Western New York, because we are so concerned about the health of people, not just in Western New York, but all over. And I mentioned to you before we went on the air, Scott, and people always say that Western New York has very, very poor, what do you call it, statistics as far as health goes. What did I?
Yeah, we call them health outcomes.
Health outcomes,
generally.
And I learned this from you that it says that here are three important reasons why public health leaders in the region needed to launch a new regional walking effort. And you wrote this, so I'm gonna ask you. I should ask you, but one of them, the first one was the annual cost of health care, which is a lot. It's astronomical. It's probably more than any place else.
And it is. The United States has the highest per capita health costs in the world, considerably higher, roughly about $2,500 to $3,000 more per year than the second.
Yeah.
The Scandinavian countries tend to be up there. And these are companies that are, you know, that provide socialized medicine. So that's a kind of a different system, a different style. And they also have better health outcomes. The U.S. tends to finish last among industrialized nations when it comes to health outcomes, even though we tend to spend more. And some people argue that's because we're spending a lot of money on the backside of healthcare after somebody gets a chronic disease, after somebody has gone so far down the path of poor health that they need to be treated in an emergency situation or need intensive treatment and hospitalization, maybe even staying in long-term care. And all of that stuff is considerably more expensive than trying to treat things on the front end of the system, the preventative end. And Refresh is designed to help folks who want to try to work up front, as well as folks who may find themselves dealing with something that's a lot more serious. What are ways to deal most effectively with those chronic health conditions like diabetes and heart disease and some others? And There are stories fairly often, including one recently, a Dr. Oz and Roizen column. And for those of you who don't know, Dr. Mike Roizen, who is the head of wellness at the Cleveland Clinic, grew up in Buffalo. And so he writes,
at least
he's told
me,
that's right, and at least he's told me he writes more than half of those columns. So, but the message they had in a recent column was, regardless of how heavy you might be, how old you might be, what sort of health condition you might have, it's never too late to start eating well, getting more exercise, sleeping the right amount every night, and just taking a little bit better care of yourself. And the impact of that in the short term can be helpful, but in the long term can be a considerable benefit.
Yeah, they definitely have, not only in Refresh, but the whole country, an emphasis now on preventative medicine, I guess, mm-hmm. what you're calling it. You know, it's because it's too late in many ways to do something about, like, high blood pressure or arthritis or any of those things, if mm-hmm. you don't do something when you're younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've interviewed folks in skilled nursing homes these days who are exercising 3 to 4 times a week, at least trying to get some walking in, because it does make an impact. If you don't use it, you're going to lose it. And that's what a 94-year-old told me as he was working out, after his working out in his walker at Greenfield just a few weeks ago.
Well, that makes you feel good. I just wanted to go back to something when we were talking about before, where it was the three important reasons why we have problems of public health leaders here in West New York. One, we said the annual cost, and the metro area. This is Metro Buffalo Niagara metro area ranked 151 out of 186 metro regions last year in terms of health and well-being, according to what's wrong with the Buffalo Niagara metro area, Scott? What's wrong with us?
And, you know, we like to blame the weather on everything.
Oh, that's
right?
That's a good answer.
It probably figures in a little bit, but that's a convenient excuse. It shouldn't necessarily be a reason about why we're not healthier. And I'd like to go through just a different ranking from that particular one, which was a Gallup ranking. But every year, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation works with the University of Wisconsin Population Health Center, and they rank every county in the United States. And since they've been doing this, and this is over the last couple or three decades, Erie and Niagara counties perform horribly compared to New York State. And so half of the 8 counties in western New York, including Erie and Niagara, continue to sit in the bottom 10 of the 62 counties across New York State when it comes to health outcomes. And I'll go through some of the reasons in a minute, but what does this mean to you? You know, what does it mean to our listeners, to Refresh readers? Well, what it means is that the average person in Erie County and in this region tends to live about 2.5 years less than the typical New York State resident. And that gets a little bit worse for other groups. Now, these rankings measure, and here are some of the reasons, right? They're measuring longevity, low birth weight, child and infant mortality, mental distress or disease, diabetes, HIV infection rates. All of those get figured into the health outcome. Now, they also figure in tobacco use, obesity, excessive drinking, physical inactivity, access to exercise, sexually transmitted diseases, teen births and child mortality. So all of these end up helping to measure the health outcomes, not only in Western New York, but across the country. And there's, income equality figures in, children in poverty, and educational status. All of these elements, the way our counties are constructed, the way our culture has been ingrained over the decades, all of that kind of fits in. And now, I always like to say that analytics. When most people think of analytics, I love the Sabres and the Bills. They think about, hey, you know, analytics is going to show us how come this particular winger isn't scoring as many goals from the same spot as a player on another team, or you know, the analytics of the Bills and the players they need.
And they use it for baseball too. They made that movie about about how they do it.
And so we're measuring that. But do you know that people analytically are studying now what diseases we have here in Western New York and what numbers and how much exercise people take? And there has been a study in, as part of a national study, there's been a study of women here in Western New York that University of Buffalo has conducted, a long-term study about their behaviors, what they eat, how many times they see a doctor, mammograms. They've even provided blood samples to test for various diseases as they age. And so people in Buffalo have participated, I think, roughly in the neighborhood of 12 to 15,000 over the years. And they've been able to measure their longevity, their personal behaviors, and that is part of a larger story that's taking place nationally and internationally that that's leading scientists to deduce all sorts of things in clinical studies. And they call them meta-analyses or meta-studies, if you ever read that. They're looking for somebody who, okay, here's a study of 50,000 people, and X number of them had heart attacks, and we ask them, what did you eat for breakfast? You know, what sort of foods did you tend to eat during a regular day? How much did you exercise? And people who study analytics are now plugging that information into databases and saying, hey, if you exercise for a certain amount of time every week, you're likely to live a little bit longer than if you don't. And so there's plenty of information out there in terms of what kind of we should be doing or that suggests that, but we're floating in information. It's just there's so much of it out there that sometimes I think it gets really confusing. And so it's worth, you know, kind of stepping back, looking at it simply, and then setting goals as we go along.
Well, there are certain things, though, that everyone kind of agrees on. I mean, everyone in the field. And you mentioned a few of them already. The importance, for example, of exercise. I mean, this just comes up. And when we were trying to blame Western New York, and you said, because a lot of people say, oh, of course, we do poorly because it's snowing, freezing, or doing something bad outside, like 7 months a year or whatever. But that's not the answer. That's definitely not the answer.
And I mean, you can't cross-country ski in Western New York.
That's right. I mean,
we've got a beautiful ice rink downtown. And if you read Refresh in the wintertime, I have a Refresh calendar at the end. There are several other skating rinks. You can certainly walk indoors, outdoors.
Okay, no excuses. This is but exercise of any kind. You've been writing consistently, and Dr. Pastor and all the people that are, say no matter what age, and you just told us before about a 90-year-old, there's something that you can do, and it makes a difference in your outcome, in your health outcome.
Yeah. And one of the latest studies that I reported a couple, 3 weeks ago was in our annual outdoor fitness section. Some researchers in Sweden and England just completed a study. And this is of like 50,000 people in Sweden and England. And those who on these meta-analysis studies said that they got at least 2 hours outdoors in, you know, moving, walking, you know, not necessarily doing anything special, but fresh air outdoors at least 2 hours a week, had a higher longevity than those who answered the questions in the study. No, we don't get outside very much. We don't do very much. We don't take walks at night. We, you know, we'd rather just watch television or, you know, whatever. And those kind of choices, those choices that we make every day, they do have consequences, and now that information is a little bit more knowable than it might have been. And you look back at cigarette smoking, and that's one of the when people talk about public health and why bother, you know, why bother taxing cigarettes, or why bother encouraging people to take healthier steps, like why put a tax on soda, for instance, which is bad for you. The rates of heart disease and some other conditions have actually come down over the last 20 or 30 years. And part of the reason for that is because of the way smoking has been treated from a public health standpoint. I'm old enough to remember, and I used to be a bartender at the Ground Round, if anybody out there remembers that place. But I used to have to serve drinks to people who were smoking cigarettes at the bar and in the restaurant. And we don't have to do that anymore. And I'll tell you, go to either a state or out of the country sometimes, and you're in a climate like that, and you realize what a huge difference that makes. And,
that's a good example of public health improve over a certain period of time, whether it be 20 years, whatever years, of how you, the authorities, have changed people's way of society's way of thinking about smoking.
Yeah, I mean, my grandparents, you know, even my father, who was a heavy smoker, I don't think he realized the damage he was doing, you know, before the Surgeon General's report came out in the mid-60s that said smoking was a danger to your health. So now they're, you know, it's kind of like that Geico commercial, right? Everybody should know that smoking causes cancer and it can kill you. And if you're going to choose to do that, it may not happen today or tomorrow, but I've lost a brother-in-law to lung cancer who was a heavy smoker. My father died at 45. He was a heavy smoker of a heart attack. Maybe you dodge that, maybe you don't. But to me, what you learn, I think, one of the lessons you learn as you're covering health is that, like it or not, health can be a lot about percentages. And the more risks you take and the more bad choices you make, the greater odds there are that something bad's going to happen to you earlier than it might otherwise. Now, life is not always fair, but you're giving yourself greater odds if you make the right choice most of the time. Nobody's perfect, so, you know, I live in Buffalo. Do I have chicken wings and pizza sometimes? Absolutely, but it's not part of my diet every day.
And Jim is looking at me in our studio about my jelly donut breakfast every chance I get. Are you thinking about it? I knew you were. If you just tuned in, you are listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And our guest today is Western New York Refresh editor Scott Scanlon. And we are discussing health and health in general and health locally as well as globally, and I guess sometimes we even throw in something about internationally, globally, because like you said, if you go travel, like I'm sure you do and I do, out of the country very often, it's amazing to me that people still smoke. I mean, you know, it's not as much, but definitely in restaurants and places where we have banned it so many years ago that I don't know, I feel like they're just behind the times.
And there has been a slight uptick in smoking rates among young women. And what are we starting to see? We had a story in Refresh within the last couple or 3 weeks about younger women having a higher percentage of heart attacks. Not a greater percentage, but it would be hard to argue that there isn't some sort of
some
a connection.
Some correlation.
Yeah, right. Between all of that. And one of the things when you talk about global health and, you know, some of the things you're starting to see in other countries is, yes, the cigarette makers in the United States haven't been selling as many cigarettes here, so they have found markets in other places. And you're starting, you know, you see the health impacts of that where maybe the regulation, the rules and the public concerns over smoking don't translate the same way they do here. We've also exported our fast food, and so you're starting to see obesity rates climb in places like India and China, where a lot of that food is now marketed. And these once U.S. companies have become international companies, and they're dealing with any number of different governments, and not all of them are as quote-unquote maybe even honest as ours is. Not that we're perfect, but we're looking at things from a public health standpoint, and at least there's a free flow of information in our country where we do have some authorities when it comes to warning about health challenges and health outcomes. One of the things, and Global Wellness Day was on June 8th, that surprised me when I was looking into speaking at the library last month, was the number one condition in the world right now when it comes to a sickness. It surprised me. And I don't know if you want to try to hazard a guess.
Diabetes?
That was guessed. Heart disease was another guess. But the number one condition worldwide is depression.
Depression. I felt that. I was going to guess. I swear I was going to guess that. That was coming. Uh-huh. Yeah. That,
and that's something
that... But a lot of people wouldn't even think of that as an illness, like you're saying, the number one disease. People wouldn't even think of that a lot of times.
And I think we're almost trained in the United States when we think about wellness and well-being, right? We constantly go to that medical place, you know, making sure that we're seeing the doctor, maybe making sure that we're going to the optometrist and getting our eyes checked. And,
physically.
Yeah, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But for Global Wellness Day, and there's a website called globalwellnessday.org that has some interesting ideas, and I'll just share what they say. What is wellness? That's a question that can be asked. Wellness is an active process of becoming aware and making choices toward a healthy and fulfilling life. It is more than being free from illness. It is a dynamic process of change and growth, a good or satisfactory condition of existence, a state characterized by health, happiness, prosperity, and welfare. And wellness is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. And this is how the World Health Organization describes it. So when you look at kind of overall well-being, the medical side is great. And you know, I'm one of the people who very strongly believes if you don't have your health, it can be very, very challenging to feel a sense of well-being. But the trick is, if you don't, or if you're looking to extend your life and to live as most meaningfully as possible, you need to focus on more than just going to see the doctor once a year or counting on the doctor to give you a pill to make sure that anything that ails you goes away. We've seen how much trouble in this country that has caused over the last generation or so. So now you're talking about, for you know whatever reasons, we could argue about this for days or years, about the stress level that we have in Western New York and in the United States and even around the world these days. How do you tamp that down? It does seem that mental health is a huge concern. I talk to a lot of primary care doctors here in Western New York, and it's almost the standard question I ask now, what percentage of your patients are dealing with some sort of a mental health condition or concern? And I'm not talking at always about bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, but anxiety,
depression,
the concerns that can come because you're dealing with the loss of a loved one, the loss of a job, maybe a child who has become addicted to opioids. If you don't address, you know, your emotional well-being in terms of, all right, how do I wrap my arms around this? How do I understand it? And how do I step back from that really intense job I have to just, you know, recalibrate? How can I do it and make that try to make that a priority in your day, in your week? You know, you can be setting yourself up for some illness down the road. So
that's why people, internists or family doctors, whatever, are now are being trained in the medical schools even to look for and ask about these issues that they never would before. It never would even come up.
Yeah, and I've been told anywhere from 25% of patients to up to 60% to 70% of patients in a primary care setting have at least occasionally the need of some sort of mental health help, whether it be seeing a counselor, whether it be medication that you might take for a while, maybe you take it for a little bit longer, and kind of erasing the stigma that, oh, we're the only people in the world that feel this this sort of pressure and maybe need to talk to somebody about strategies to deal with it in a better way.
That's why people are turning to yoga and meditation and things mm-hmm. like that. I'm trying to think of what they call it, even in the schools, mindfulness. Mm-hmm. They're actually teaching mm-hmm. something called mindfulness in primary school, mm-hmm. elementary school.
And you know, I did a refresh package a few months ago on yoga for kids in various settings, and I went to a dance studio in Alma where it was being taught. I went to a kids yoga studio in Clarence, and I went to a school in the Near East Side in Buffalo where it was being taught. These kids they ranged anywhere in age from 2 to 15, 16 years old. They all felt different pressures as part of their lives, but they all said that they benefited and were learning skills to kind of slow down, to cope better with and become a little bit more resilient with changes that maybe were blindsiding them here and there just from taking a yoga class once or twice a week for an hour. And, I mean, if it's going to help kids, probably help grown-ups, too.
Well, I was going to say, to go all the way up to senior citizens, because you did mm-hmm. a story about a friend of mine, Loretta, who is teaching yoga to people 70 and older.
Mm-hmm. And it's creating more awareness of, when you create more awareness of how you breathe and how you stretch your body, how it moves, you create a greater awareness when you take a walk in your neighborhood and you sense it in a different way than you would
if you're in a car. Yes, definitely.
You know, or if you're biking on a bike path, or doing that, it gives you a sense of looking at the world in a different way, and I think it helps your brain become
hopefully
more
relaxing.
Elastic.
Yeah.
It relaxes you,
yeah.
And it really helps you. It helps you to sleep better. All of these, you know, eating better, exercising a little bit more and effectively, it does. It reverberates into other parts of your life, mm-hmm. and analytically, yeah. studies are showing
and
that.
They prove it.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And you're here to prove it.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, if you listen to On Target and if you read Refresh every week, you are going to be in so much better shape than if you didn't. So I'm just telling you right now, thanks. Thank you, Scott Scanlon.
Yeah.
And thanks, everybody, for joining us on Target. And we'll look for you again next week. Have a good and healthy week, everybody. Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.